This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Today we return to Aldo Leopold's A Sand County Almanac, the August chapter called The Green Pasture, and the September chapter called Coral Copse. The Green Pasture takes us to a receding river where our main character, a sedge, Eleocheris, takes full advantage of the newly opened habitat of a sandy, clear ribbon of riverside. I learned from my botanist friends that this is a group of sedges that is quick to take advantage of wet, open areas where there's a lack of competition. You'll soon enjoy this plant with Aldo's insights. I read on Wikipedia that it has photosynthetic stems, but no green leaves. The leaves have been reduced to sheaths surrounding the base of the stems. The name is derived from the Greek helios, meaning marsh dweller, and charis, meaning grace, Eleocheris. And the second reading, the coral copse, is about bobwhite quail and their sounds, especially early pre-dawn morning from their nighttime covey sets. I'm sorry to say that they've all but disappeared from Wisconsin in the last 20 to 30 years due to habitat loss. I will play their early morning sounds at the end of this short chapter. I hope my voice reaches some of you who still hear and perhaps see wild bobwhites. And now, August, the green pasture. Some paintings become famous because, being durable, they are viewed by successive generations, in each of which are likely to be found a few appreciative eyes. I know a painting so evanescent that it is seldom viewed at all, except by some wandering deer. It is a river who wields the brush, and it is the same river who, before I can bring my friends to view his work, erases it forever from human view. After that, it exists only in my mind's eye. Like other artists, my river is temperamental. There is no predicting when the mood to paint will come upon him or how long it will last. But in midsummer, when the great white fleets cruise the sky for day after flawless day, it is worth strolling down to the sandbars just to see whether he has been at work. The work begins with a broad ribbon of silt brushed thinly on the sand of a receding shore. As this dries slowly in the sun, goldfinches bathe in its pools, and deer, herons, killdeers, raccoons, and turtles cover it with a lacework of tracks. There is no telling, at this stage, whether anything further will happen. But when I see the silt ribbon turning green with Eleocheris, I watch closely thereafter, for this is the sign that the river is in a painting mood. Almost overnight, the Eleocheris becomes a thick turf, so lush and so dense that the meadow mice from the adjoining upland cannot resist the temptation. They move in mass to the green pasture and apparently spend the nights rubbing their ribs in its velvety depths. A maze of neatly tended mouse trails bespeaks their enthusiasm. The deer walk up and down in it, apparently just for the pleasure of feeling it underfoot. Even a stay-at-home mole has tunneled his way across the dry bar to the Eleocheris ribbon, where he can heave and hump the verdant sod to his heart's content. At this stage, the seedlings of plants too numerous to count and too young to recognize spring to life from the damp, warm sand under the green ribbon. To view the painting, give the river 3 more weeks of solitude, and then visit the bar on some bright morning, just after the sun has melted the daybreak fog. The artist has now laid his colors and sprayed them with dew. The Eleocheris sod, greener than ever, is now spangled with blue mimulus, pink dragon head, and the milk-white blooms of Sagittaria. Here and there, a cardinal flower thrusts a red spear skyward. At the head of the bar, purple ironweeds and pale pink joe pies stand tall against the wall of willows. and if you have come quietly and humbly, as you should, to any spot that can be beautiful only once, you may surprise a fox-red deer standing knee-high in the garden of his delight. Do not return for a second view of the green pasture, for there is none. Either falling water has dried it out, or rising water has scoured the bar to its original austerity of clean sand. But in your mind you may hang up your picture and hope that in some other summer the mood to paint may come upon the river. September, the coral copse. By September the day breaks with little help from birds. A song sparrow may give a single half-hearted song. A woodcock may twitter overhead en route to his dynamic thicket. A barred owl may terminate the night's argument with one last wavering call, but few other birds have anything to say or sing about. It is on some, but not all, of these misty autumn daybreaks that one may hear the chorus of the quail. The silence is suddenly broken by a dozen contralto voices, no longer able to restrain their praise of the day to come. After a brief minute or two, the music closes as suddenly as it began. There is a peculiar virtue in the music of elusive birds. Songsters that sing from topmost boughs are easily seen and as easily forgotten. They have the mediocrity of the obvious. What one remembers is the invisible hermit thrush pouring silver chords from impenetrable shadows, the soaring crane trumpeting from behind a cloud, the prairie chicken booming from the mists of nowhere, the quail's Ave Maria in the hush of dawn. No naturalist has even seen the coral act, for the covey is still on its invisible roost in the grass, and any attempt to approach automatically induces silence. In June, it is completely predictable that the robin will give voice when the light intensity reaches 100th candle power, and that the bedlam of other singers will follow in predictable sequence. In autumn, on the other hand, the robin is silent, and it is quite unpredictable whether the covey chorus will occur at all. The disappointment I feel on these mornings of silence perhaps shows that things hoped for have a higher value than things assured. The hope of hearing quail is worth half a dozen risings in the dark. My farm always has one or more coveys in autumn, but the daybreak chorus is usually distant. I think this is because the coveys prefer to roost as far as possible from the dog, whose interest in quail is even more ardent than my own. One October dawn, however, as I sat sipping coffee by the outdoor fire, a chorus burst into song hardly a stone's throw away. They had roosted under a white pine copse, possibly to stay dry during the heavy dews. We felt honored by this daybreak hymn, sung almost at our doorstep. Somehow the blue autumnal needles on those pines became henceforth bluer, and the red carpet of dewberry under those pines became even redder. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.